welcome everyone to another episode of the Conscious Junkie Show. I'm thrilled to today be joined by my yogi friend Steph. She's blonde, beautiful, and sometimes all over the place.
I got to know
Steph. Stephanie Sergeant, when I was doing my first teacher training in India back in 2015. The two of us were like cats on fire and connected in many ways. I love the many hats that she proudly wears. She's an inspiring yoga teacher, massage therapist, English teacher, and hypnotherapist. Steph is probably the closest I will ever get to a superstar since she massaged Leonardo DiCaprio. Steph is in the podcast today to share about her past struggles with eating disorders, living the dream life in Bali or other tropical places, and super interesting hypnotherapy. Yes. Welcome to the podcast,
Thank
Steph.
Thank you for having me. Super pumped to be here.
Yes, I'm really excited to be here, and I think it's just nice to mention that we are, where are we?
Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka. And how did I get here?
You came from India because I needed you to cover my yoga classes.
That's damn right. Yeah, and I'm so excited that we sort of, we haven't seen each other too much over the past year, but we always had this connection. Yeah, because we were both traveling and working, and I feel like
Once a year, we seem to see each other.
Yeah, or we could still connect, like, through another place where we had both been, and then you were to
Bali Silent Retreat.
That was really nice.
That was a big life-changing moment in that for me. A really special place.
Yeah,
so if you ever go to Bali, make
go
sure
visit
you go.
Bali Silent Retreat. Yeah. Nothing like it's just
really
freaking
beautiful.
Magic.
Yeah.
It's magic. Cool. So I'm very excited to have you on a podcast today. And we've actually spent the whole morning together.
We have.
Yeah.
It's been a roller coaster.
It's been a roller coaster indeed. Yeah. So it's like almost 2:30 in the afternoon here now. And I arrived here this morning at 9. And then I had my first ever hypnotherapy session with Steph.
And how was that?
I'm soon gonna tell more about that, but before we go much more into that, I just want to start off with some pretty random, but I would say fun questions.
Yes.
Because I got the feeling that as we get deeper into the subject, it might not be right to dive into some crazy stuff. So I'm just gonna fire some questions at you, Steph.
Go.
And the thing is just to answer them quickly.
Okay.
So just don't take, first thing that comes up, just throw it at me.
I can do it.
See how that goes. Yeah, you ready?
I'm ready.
First of all, what are you wearing?
Leggings and a black bra.
Yeah, you're pretty black today.
Yeah,
yesterday you were very colorful.
I go
colorful.
Through stages.
Like this pink. Oh my goodness.
I looked like a ballerina like 2 days ago. I forgot all my yoga stuff. And Jonas was like, oh, you look like a little ballerina today. I was like, oh, okay.
It was very cute.
I have different styles every day. It's really good.
But for me, really, everything looks good on you.
Aww.
Yeah, no, it's unfair. It's unfair. Anyway, okay, so I'm going to go throw these questions at you. Sunset or sunrise?
Both.
Breakfast or dinner?
Dinner.
Leggings or shorts?
Leggings.
Have you ever stolen anything?
Yes.
Would you rather be a unicorn or have a pet as unicorn?
Have a pet.
Okay. Bottom or top?
On what? Oh.
Answer quickly.
Top.
When was the last time you got shit-faced?
Oh, New Year's Eve. Ooh.
All right, fair enough.
New Year's resolution, no drink.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Oh, that's good. And your worst purchase ever?
Oh. Apple Watch. Oof.
You've got it.
I bought it, I wore it once, and I sold it.
Yeah, did you?
Yeah, stupid stuff.
Yeah, it's a bit over the top now.
It's ridiculous.
Why do you need it for? Your freaking notifications on your wrist?
I decided that I wanted to be an Apple babe and bought everything Apple and then sold it all.
Okay, good. You better stick to eating the apples, right? Your favorite song?
Bob Marley Redemption song.
Sweet. Least favorite chore?
His favorite what?
Sure, like the house, the thing you have to do in the house, like the laundry.
Oh, chore.
Chore, sorry.
The dishwasher.
The dishwasher. And what if there's none? You have to hand wash everything.
I like that more than the dishwasher.
Yeah.
I know, it's weird.
Okay.
Mm.
I actually feel the same in that. Okay,
yeah,
we should just do more singing or dancing.
Oh, both. I have. I can't.
You have to choose. Okay. Singing while dancing.
Dancing.
Okay. And then your favorite body part of yourself?
My waist.
It's very pretty.
Thank you.
And your least favorite body part?
My legs.
Oh, it's so funny. I just really can't believe that. But it's so funny how we all have these things for ourselves.
I know.
And we don't know what's in someone else's head. And you can like put all these labels on someone like beautiful, pretty, tall.
I know. I have no idea what's going on in their mind.
You have no clue. No. Hmm. All right, cool. So I think that's quite a nice bridge towards our next subject or next question.
Yes.
How did Steph look on her sweet 16 and how did she feel?
16 was a really rough year for me, actually. It was kind of that really hormonal. I suffer a lot with my hormones. I was a very kind of when my eating disorder really took a hold of me, and I was drinking heavily, you know, like really.
Where were you living back then?
I was in England at that point, and I got in with the wrong crowd, and I didn't care about school, and I just kind of scraped through college at that point. But I was very lots of makeup and fake tan, fake hair, fake nails, fake
appearance,
everything. Oh, it was all about. I would not leave the house without a pair of fake eyelashes on.
No, for real.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like now I don't give a shit. But
yes.
Yeah, it's just that was the point in my life where I was very self-conscious, like very, very self-conscious about everything, every hair and just everything
of appearance.
It was a pretty hard year.
Would you, it's just like, I'm just assuming, I'm not sure, but would you say that it's like a bit of a bigger thing in the UK than it's elsewhere in Europe, like that appearance, that it's so important? I just have seen some series and some, you know,
I'm everywhere in different
it's
ways.
It's everywhere.
I really think everywhere.
Yeah,
you know, I've been a lot of places, like lots of people have, and I would say more into the cities, a little bit more.
Yeah, perhaps.
But just everyone cares.
Yeah.
You know, everyone really cares about what they look like. And there's definitely, I think when you come more over to this side of the world and like kind of in the poverty area, it's not so strong.
Yeah.
But
still there's a lot of drinking sometimes, like in the little towns in England and stuff. It can be pretty bad. Even in Holland, I think they just go get shit-faced somewhere on the
England for drinking is next level.
Yeah.
England, Scotland,
yeah.
Ireland, we love to drink.
Yeah.
I think English girls especially are renowned for being quite the drinkers.
They freaking are. There's so much television, like it's ridiculous how to make television and lots of money out of that, but it's actually so sad.
Yeah, it's really
sad. If they would only invest that money in helping the people instead of
I remember 16, you know, I was going out clubbing and getting shit faced every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and getting into clubs and just trying my best. I used to get all different types of alcohol and put it into one bottle, shake it up and drink it.
Holy fucking shit.
I'm talking Port and Bailey's and vodka.
This has nothing to do with the taste of it. It's just getting smashed.
Yeah. Really
wow.
Weird.
When was your first drunken experience?
I think it was on my 13th birthday. It was my best friend's 13th birthday, but we had a joint party. And we kind of just, her mum thought that she was being like really
cool,
responsible. And like, you guys just have one bottle of was it Smirnoff Ice, you know, really cheap stuff. And we had one and just, we were all so drunk. It was quite funny. Like we look back.
Yeah.
I guess 13 is kind of, I think that's like a normal age. Is it super young? I would say most people are having their first drink.
I was pretty late. I think 15 or 16.
Oh, okay. I did start pretty young.
And but then, I hear,
But when I started, like that was the beginning to everything. It was every weekend from like 13 onwards.
Wow.
Which is pretty heavy.
And you mentioned, I think it's really cool that you, open up quite vulnerably about your previous eating disorder on your website. I think that's a very cool thing to do, because it's like the first impression people get from you, and you decided to be open about that, like right from the start. I think
there was many years where I just was in denial and I suffered a lot in silence, and it's a really horrible place to be, you know, trapped in your head and not talking and just being in that denial, to anger, to frustration, to really defending,
not loving yourself.
Yeah, I'm really defending that lie. Like, everything becomes a lie.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just lie after lie, and you get caught in your own lies, which...
Yes.
Then the guilt kicks in, and then the anger, and it's just like this cycle over and over again. And I find, honestly, since I've really opened up about it, I've... So many girls, like, nearly every girl I've met, bar, like, 3 or 4... I like, oh my God, I've got the same thing.
Or in some way struggle with...
Not always like full bulimia or anorexia, but binge eating, not feeling good. And our relationship with food, it's a real relationship. Like,
yeah.
we eat to live and enjoy, and everything culturally is around food. And,
yeah. And it's not like we're doing, I just don't drink anymore, because you have to eat in order to live and to...
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of difficult.
So the more I open up and show my vulnerability on that, it was really hard in the beginning. But then I just thought, oh, sod it, let's help other people.
Did you hit a wall that you decided to flip the script, or?
It was a really kind of slow, agonizing process.
It's different for anyone.
Yeah. I got some help when I was younger, and then it kind of went away. And then it came back pretty hard when I was working back on yachts, which is a really superficial industry.
Oh, yeah.
I had a great time. I don't want to badmouth that at all, but it's all about how you look, and you will be pulled up if you're not looking your best, or you've gained weight, or anything like this. Like, you really have to be looking pretty top-notch. So that triggered a big thing when I was about 21, 22. And it was one of those things that were just kind of calm and go and calm and go, but it never really went. It was always that cycle.
Yeah. Maybe you were out of it for a while and then it kicked back.
Yeah. It's just always obsessed with your weight and how you look.
Fucking hell, yeah.
It just consumes you. And when you are eating, when you do finally eat and then...
Well, sorry, just check. Were you like more towards the anorexic side or the bulimic?
It's hard to say, because it was anorexia to bulimia. Because if you starve yourself, if you have to have such control to really not eat, to actually be starving, then you have this huge binge, because you're literally starving, and then you puke it all up again.
Yeah.
So, or you exercise like crazy. So
you purge. Yeah. Anyway.
You know, sometimes my weight, I would always be pretty thin or super, super, super thin, very, very underweight. Never really went to a very heavier weight. I was just, every time I ate something, on the scales, off the scales, like 5 or 6 times a day.
Holy shit.
You know, the typical...
Body checking.
Yeah, body check, like all of that, you know, and it's the same story for everyone. And the more I really investigate this thing, it's a really new disease. Like, this wasn't here a couple of hundred years ago. It's a new disease for us.
That's right.
We're so obsessed now.
Only over the past, what is it like, since the 90s? Maybe I'm not, don't...
Well,
but it started, that whole modeling industry and these magazines, and the more, oh my goodness, it started to become so bad.
And so much
pressure on these young shoulders, on these tiny young shoulders of girls who want to look as skinny as, it's actually pretty.
Yeah, it's really sad. And you know, when you see it, and I have a very strong sense for it as well, so I know, especially when a girl is going through it as well. And that's why, when I'm terrible, but whenever I meet a girl, it's like one of the first things I say. I'm like, oh yeah, but I had an eating disorder. And
it's no problem for you.
No, it's really no problem for me. And I'm really proud, actually. Like, why should I not be proud?
Yeah.
You know, I went through something that was really, really tough for me. I came out the other side, and you know, it's still something that I have to work towards, but it's not ruling my life now.
Okay, but would you say it's always a part, or are you really over it? It's like a different life.
I don't want to say that it will always be a part of me, but at the moment it's still something that I'm working through to be. I don't know if you're ever 100% okay with yourself all of the time, but I would say I'm pretty in charge of where I'm at right now. And you know, there's certain things that trigger it. You know, if you get too drunk, you always feel, if you have a little bit too much to drink, you know,
because that lowers, like, that brings you down on the level of consciousness.
Yeah.
So then sometimes if it's still somewhere, it might trigger. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really about having the awareness, you know. Maybe it will keep coming back throughout my life. Maybe it will completely leave. but when it's there, I have to be aware of it. I have to act on it. Like I can't just let it manifest, because I did that for so many years, and that.
When did it start? On what age?
I would say the first time I dieted was about 15, and that's when I went to. I just lost a load of weight. I was just really tired of feeling fat, mm-hmm. if that's even a thing. You know, I feel fat.
But you were never fat.
I was never fat.
It was just how you felt.
Normal girl. Yeah. And I ate a lot. I had a big appetite, but I was healthy. And I just started going to the gym and just eating fruit and salad. You know, like when you hear about, you know, the magazines back
of
then,
course.
Like, blah, 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 these, everyone's on their yo-yo diet, blah, blah, blah. And I did that. And this, everyone started saying, oh my God, you look so good. You look so great. And that's like, oh, okay, so I reward me for being thin. Okay, cool. So I'm going to keep losing weight because I like the attention and I like being told that I'm beautiful and I look so good and how did you do that? So that started to define me at 15.
Yes.
You know, that was defining who I was by people telling me how nice I was because I was
When thin. You were, yeah.
Yeah, and then that's when it would always be, that's when it started. That's when I think the relationship with food happened. And then it was like a slow process. It wasn't overnight. I was anorexic, bulimic. It was like this slow cycle that then, boom, it blew up.
All right.
Yeah.
Yes. So is there a certain form of therapy or a book, or is there something which really, really helped you to make this change?
Yeah, I think the definitely therapy and talking to someone really, really helps.
Sorry, the what therapy?
At the time I was just normal therapy, so going to see my therapist, talking to friends a little bit, but I was still very shy and embarrassed, and because I wasn't proud, no one would say that they had it, you know. But when you're like open, people are more open. Yeah, I read a few books. I can't actually remember them right now.
We spoke about Brain Over Binge.
Brain Over Binge
is a great one.
That's a very logical science-based book, which I actually really... I found that really good, actually.
It's good.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I tried antidepressants as well, but that just made me so numb.
Yes.
Like, I was not high or low or anything. It was just like this constant feeling of nothing. And I didn't like that.
But did you suffer from depression, or did they gave it to you for the eating disorder?
A bit of both.
I've heard both.
Because what happens is when you're really not nourishing your body, your electrolytes, everything comes down, you're not functioning. Like, I was a crazy bitch.
Well, yeah.
I really was. There was no logical thought in my mind. Like, everything annoyed me, and then I was crying, then I was happy, I was manic, and then depressive.
Yeah.
It's just up and down, up and down. Because my body was dehydrated, I was...
Undernourished, all these things. Yes.
Yeah. And,
So therapy helped you?
Yeah, therapy helped. But the biggest thing that happened was after the boats, it kind of all went away, and then it came back with a big bang when I went back on my last boat about a year and a half ago. And then it just got really kind of out of control, and I was like, okay.
On the boat or after
on
the boat.
And
also because you can't really decide what you eat. Is the food good there and healthy?
Yeah, it's really good, and it's like it's just full of whatever you want whenever you want.
Shit.
And
yeah
it's just, it's not a great place to be when you're going through that. So and then I left that, and everything kind of got better again. And then I really reached out to Jonas.
Your boyfriend?
Yeah, my boyfriend. And I was just like, okay, I'm really struggling. I'm feeling really bad. And then when I look back at my behavior, like, I was so explosive, you know? Like, everything irritated me because I was so dehydrated and just ready to explode at anything because I had no food in my body.
Yeah.
And then...
This was when you just got off the yacht?
Yeah. And then I think... I went to Arhanta, and I was volunteering teaching the 200 hour teacher training. And then I met the other volunteer, who was an Indian lady, who is an amazing friend of mine now, called Shika. And she gave me therapy about three times. It wasn't particularly about the eating disorder as much. Kind of touched on it. I wasn't really still that ready for it. It's kind of like the secret relationship that you have with this eating disorder. Yeah. It's like
it's very hard to.
You're very protective over it.
Yeah.
And it's like my own little thing was like my comfort.
Yeah.
And anyway, so I had that, but it really helped. Like I went through a lot of deep stuff in those sessions with Shika. And that's when I was like, I really want to do hypnotherapy.
Because that was hypnotherapy.
Yeah, she gave me hypnotherapy.
In the ashram.
In the ashram, yeah.
Wow.
And then I was like, I want to go and have like a full therapy session and I want to learn about this and I want to understand it. And then that's when I went about 5 or 6 months, no, 5 months later, I went to Delhi and I did my training.
You were so inspired. And
yeah, she's amazing. I love her. She really changed my life.
Wow.
And then I went through therapy there and it was about the eating. And since then, I do self-hypnosis and I find my way through. There's ups and downs, definitely, but I'm in charge.
But you would say that hypnotherapy has been the biggest game changer in this?
For me, yeah. It's different for everyone. You know, like I'm not saying that that this is the end goal for everyone, but you have to find what works for you. And if it works, then
why not try it?
Yeah. And it really
everyone
helps
has
me.
To find their own path, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just really helped me a lot. And then I think it's really important as well, like not only to have a hypnotherapist, but you know, we constantly are looking after our physical body, but when do we give that time to look after our mental body? It's like to have a therapist doesn't make you crazy. It just makes you really healthy that you are able to vent and say the things that you need to do. And I think that's what I needed. I needed someone to talk to.
Yeah.
And just talk about everything and like let it go and vent what's going on. And that's what I needed. And I also went and saw a psychologist and a hypnotherapist in Bali just because I was like, oh, I'm feeling a bit off. I'm having that.
Why not ask for help? Fuck.
Yeah, and that's my biggest challenge. Like, asking for help is okay. Like,
it's okay.
And, you know,
it's a big learning for me too. We were talking about this morning.
Yeah, we were saying this morning, it's like, I'm a new, and most people in this profession, like yoga teacher, therapist, massage therapist, anything, we're always giving, and we really love people.
We do.
We really do. Like,
we really give a lot. Yeah. But it's also, at least it is for me, because you are the yoga teacher and you're like provoking
you
self-love and connection
know,
with the body and mind, and then you struggle with this shit.
Yeah, being human.
Yeah, it is. And it's actually as soon as you start to make the shift in your head of being really, really okay and in like a place of acceptance, it can shift for yourself.
Yeah.
What you're saying, like if you keep it this crazy motherfucking friend on your shoulder, it's still secret and it keeps whispering in your ear.
Yeah.
These nasty things.
With the world, like we don't show our vulnerability anymore.
No.
And it's all about, you know, the Instagram.
It's so much
story.
About appearance, right? Yeah. And then you come with your shitty story and in your how it feels for your shitty body.
Yeah.
You just don't
And also like when you're not a fat person or overweight and then you say your feelings, everyone's like, you're so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like,
what are you talking about? There's no way to complain.
It's not
very supportive.
Cool.
Yeah,
you know, so if someone is feeling like that, then that's a cry for help. That's their way of saying, like, I'm feeling down, whether you're 2 stone or 200 stone, it doesn't matter. It's just acknowledging those feelings. Yeah, it's really, really important to acknowledge those wherever they're from.
And I think, especially us girls, we could be all so much more supportive in this.
Yeah.
We could connect, like, there is so much. Well, it's actually a great opportunity to, like, listen more and react less and just practice, just to really practice listening. And listen to that other person.
Yeah.
Because as soon as someone starts to talk, you start to judge, like, oh, there's no way that you can struggle with this and I'm fatter or look at this. But really, just listen to what someone is going through.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's why I really decided to change the way when I meet people that I just present myself, who I am, how I am, because I don't have anything to hide anymore.
That's so great.
And that's such a relieving feeling for so many years to hide everything about myself.
Yeah. Because it's like hand in hand with everything. If you're hiding dick, it's such a big piece of your life that if you're hiding that, you're hiding like everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And some people, honestly, I'd say 99% of people actually are really inspired by it, but then every now and then people kind of like, okay, why is this girl telling me her life story? Yeah. This is kind of awkward. Mm-hmm. But 99% of the time it's always
definitely
a very,
it's
positive,
inspiring, and other people start to open up and all these things. So I'm just curious, I don't hear you saying anything about yoga in this process. Would you say that was a small part, or
I mean,
not so much?
Yeah, yoga really helped me to obviously connect to my body. And whenever I felt really disconnected, I would go to a class. But then I kind of noticed that it was more an escape.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. To kill time, to know that you were safe for an hour or two.
Yeah, it would be like, I go to yoga and I just, you know, a lot in the Western classes, it's not really about the meditation, it's about the movement, which is fine. Like, that's great. Yeah. I love that. You know how I love to move. But it was more
an escape. Yeah, I resonate with that.
It was an escape for a lot of time. A healthy escape.
Yeah,
I can think of a lot
of
worse things that I was doing beforehand.
Definitely.
As an escape. So of course yoga helped me as my escape to be a healthy one,
yeah,
a healthy habit instead of alcohol and drugs.
That's good.
Yeah,
indeed. Oh yeah, I resonate with that. Cool. So then, like, when was it that you decided to go to Delhi to do your hypnotherapist course?
That was
last year.
Over 2 years ago.
Really?
Yeah,
over 2 years ago.
Was last time I was here in November. Oh no, it was a year and a half ago, sorry.
A year and a half ago.
Yeah, a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And that's when I went to Delhi a year and 3 months ago.
And was it in some sort of institute?
Yeah, it was the I've completely forgotten the name.
Me? It's okay.
It was HSI, Hypnotherapy School of India. There you go, that was so hard.
Say it once again?
The Hypnotherapy School of India.
All right.
With a beautiful teacher called Blossom.
Blossom?
Blossom, yeah.
Oh.
I know, what an angel.
Yeah.
I sat through the course twice because I found it so interesting.
Yeah.
It was very scientific. But what I found the most interesting was the metaphysical world and, like, understanding the soul, the journey of the soul.
Yeah.
And just things that I was, like, just, like, completely mind blown, like, God. And I remember thinking, I'm like, oh, I've got it all figured out.
But then,
But yeah, I went through therapy there. I was there for about 2.5 months.
Yeah, wow, that's so interesting. Well, I had my first session with you this morning, and I stepped into it pretty open minded. Like,
you did. You were a beautiful client.
that's nice.
You were.
It was like, I've heard things about it, and I have to say, I'm great in visualization, so I had this thing in mind. It's probably from a cartoon. I don't know where it's from, like people lying down and then some sort of making them crazy sounds and movements and screaming and yelling. And
the misconceptions, you know, when I meet people, oh, you're a hypnotherapist, don't look me in the eye. Like,
freak. Yeah. And I see this clock like in front of the eyes, left, right. But it was not like that at all.
No, it definitely wasn't.
I got some questions and there was a good one. And I think it's a nice one. It sounds simple, but what's the difference between a good talk, one-to-one, and a hypnotherapy session?
So with the hypnotherapy, we're really allowing the conscious mind to be put to one side. So everybody's probably heard of the subconscious mind and the conscious mind. So when we're just having a normal conversation, our conscious mind is really, it's there, and it's there to protect you. So it's always kind of assessing.
It's rational.
Yeah, it's assessing. It's like, should we lie? Should we not lie? Should we exaggerate? Should we not exaggerate? And when the subconscious mind is there, it's your pure form. It's really, it knows everything about you, but it's very vulnerable and shy. So it doesn't always come out when you need it, because the conscious mind is pretty
protective,
pretty strong. Always kind of like your ego.
Yes.
So when you're in hypnosis, you are allowing yourself to really relax so that conscious mind can slip away. It's still there, like, you know, it's still there, but it's just a lot less dominant. So when you're functioning from that subconscious mind, you're a lot more free to be like, okay, let's explore, let's be vulnerable, let's talk about it, let's not care if something ridiculous comes up, let's just feel it, let's cry, let's go through it, or let's laugh. It's really different for everyone. But yeah, when you really have that subconscious mind, it's obviously, like, you know, it's a little bit more free.
It did feel more free. Yeah. And I experienced it to be as a very beautiful space, like the whole time. We had a 2-hour session. First we had a conversation.
Yeah.
And like right from the moment I sat down in a chair, so I was sitting down in a chair and Steph was sitting in front of me, I wanted to close down my eyes.
Yeah.
Just to sort of get into my own space.
Yeah.
And then you were going through a lot of questions. Yeah. And actually I thought that the session already started. I felt like already. And then I think 1 hour later I was like, okay, and now we're going to go into hypnosis.
Hypnosis, yeah.
Yes. And I was like, oh, I didn't say anything because that's like definitely the conscious mind kicking in some. But it was interesting to sort of constantly, like, I would describe it as being into this beautiful space.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt very in touch with my feelings and with, actually, with little Lotte.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it was so random. Like, this. At one moment I was like, what time is it? And then I was like, what shall I eat for lunch? And I was like, oh fuck, I'm here to talk about food, so I should not think about it. It was like those things from, so they just popped up. But I could probably, it's been the easiest ever for me to let go of the thoughts. Mm-hmm. Now that I think about it, and it's funny, I process it when I talk.
Yeah.
But I think I've never had one meditation session in which I could let go of thoughts as easy as it went today.
Yeah.
They could come up and I was like, nah, that's not... where I want to be now.
That's the subconscious mind, like, helping you out a lot more. But yeah, the conscious mind is always there. And in your first session, you still had a really good deep session. Everything came up that you needed to for today. But you were able to allow that subconscious really to take over more than the conscious mind.
Yeah, it was special.
Yeah. We always, and each time you do hypnotherapy, that conscious mind gets a little bit further and further away.
Yeah, because you become more in trust. Yeah. And
it's always, I remember my first session, I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
But the thing is like, being a hypnotherapist, I have no interest in doing anything to control or manipulate you. I just want you to find what's going on, and you locate the problem. You're the genius, you know everything that's happening. I just navigate you there.
You're a facilitator, basically.
Exactly. I facilitate you to find your truth.
Could you actually brainwash someone if you had bad intentions?
I think there's a lot of people that could. I don't even know how to do that. I think that there are people out there, but also
it's possible if you look at this.
But it also, look at the people that they're doing
really
it on. They're people who are low on energy. They're very, very either depressed or very easily controlled. These are the people that they'll target. These are the people that, if you've got a strong-minded person that is, you know, in charge of themselves, then they're not going to be able to walk around on stage and cluck like a chicken. You know, like how you've seen on some of the things on YouTube with hypnosis.
Yeah.
But it really depends on the person. I've heard a few horror stories, you know, like about...
Yeah, that's always. But also with normal therapists, there's always horror stories.
You know, I think having that intuition when you meet the therapist, do I trust her or him?
Definitely, that's
important.
Do
I have that connection? And just find out that background, like understand where they're
coming
from.
Yeah, do some research, that's good.
Yeah, definitely do your research on the therapist, for sure.
And I can imagine, like, for me, it felt very safe to do it with you. I didn't have any thoughts about it really, but I can imagine that for some people it's difficult to do it with someone they know, like a friend or a family member. I can imagine.
It really depends on the person. So some friends would be like, oh, I really don't want to do it with a friend because they find it easier to a stranger, which I totally get. And some people would rather do it with me because I'm their friend.
Yeah.
They know me, they know that I'm trustworthy.
Yeah.
But it is very difficult to do it on a very close family member, and you can put them into hypnosis and relax them. You can use hypnosis for so many things. You know, with Jonas, we tried it when I first studied, and I was super keen and excited, and I did it on him, and he went very deep, and he had a really deep session, and he felt very uncomfortable with me doing his therapy. Not because he didn't trust or love me, but what happens if something came up and it was about me?
Yeah, you
and
don't
so,
know.
Yeah, so we decided that it wasn't best for me to do that. So now I just give him hypnosis for relaxation.
That makes sense. Not to dig into his past or whatever.
Let that be. That's
good.
His thing. And I think that's a very good way of looking at it.
Yeah, I think so too.
Well.
And it's nice that you got to experience it and then like, okay, now this is enough.
Yeah.
cool. Yeah. So would you say that hypnotherapy could be for anyone? Or are there certain groups of people?
I really think that it is for everyone who's willing and has a burning desire to change. If someone is here, I just want to try it. I just want to go to a past life. I just want to see what it's like. But I have no interest. I don't care about it. Then
not really open-minded.
What is your intention?
Intention is important, you mentioned earlier. Yeah.
And to really come with that intention of change, like you can't help someone that doesn't want to be helped.
Definitely
and that not. Doesn't have that open mind to try something new. So yeah, I think that it's really for everyone. And I'm very careful with how I present it to people as well.
I understand.
I try to let people come to me. I'm a hypnotherapist. If you feel that you need a therapy, please let me know.
Go very organic.
Yeah, I would never push anyone into something that they wouldn't want to, because it wouldn't be good for me, it wouldn't be good for them. So I allow, sounds a bit crazy, but I allow the universe to guide and navigate whoever comes my way and who needs me, and I need them equally as a therapist. I need them to grow and learn and help them.
Yeah. It's an exchange of energy still.
Definitely. Yeah. Like I grow as a therapist each time I do a therapy, and hopefully I help and facilitate people out of their issue as well.
That's wonderful. Hey, I got another good question, and that's like, why or how could hypnotherapy work where other therapies fail if it comes to eating disorders? Would you recommend it above other therapies?
I think that you have to find your own path. I think that I know a really close friend of mine who had normal psychology, and that just worked really well for her, and she went from a lot of big challenges into her life to really being like 180 degrees of a person, and so that worked for her. And I know other people, just normal counseling, it worked. I know other people that had hypnotherapy, regression therapy, tapping, all these different things. Like, I think you've just got to find your calling. If you have a feeling that I want to go and see, maybe I try hypnotherapy.
Yeah,
Or maybe I try forgiveness therapy.
You feel that you're drawn to.
I was drawn to hypnotherapy.
Yeah,
I was.
Then
really,
you should explore. Yeah, that's not for nothing. Might be your intuition, like big chance.
Yeah, and again, it's always taking that leap of faith and listening to that gut and heart feeling.
That's it.
And I think we all have that. We just have to really be quiet for a minute and be like, okay, what do I need?
Absolutely.
Do I
only
need to
in
just
silence talk? You can really tune in with this strong
and
power.
And there has been a few therapies where I have done a cognitive session, so the session, you know, the conscious mind of us talking in the beginning, which is already a huge realization by
Definitely,
the end of
yes.
it. And you know, the client has been very, very scared about the hypnosis, and you know, that's enough. Form the affirmation, go home, do a little work on yourself, and come back in a week and we can do the hypnosis.
Work from there.
Not everyone needs to go through it. Not everyone needs to have that hypnotherapy, but it is a good thing. If it's calling you, do it. If there's something that you want,
if you
have anything, even if you're upset about your dog dying or you know, anything, what it is, just try it. Give it a go.
Yeah, 100%.
It's the worst that can happen. But do your research on your therapist.
Yeah, that's a very good
advice. Yeah, that's a really,
that's a
really good
great giveaway. Okay. So, Steph, I think we've got some good questions answered. I think I'm going to take some more sessions with you because I'm still very curious.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a wonderful experience, like you said.
Yeah. Not scary.
Not scary. No, but it's like with all things you do for the first time.
Yeah, of course.
It was like different. Some sort of like good sort of excitement, so I didn't mind it, and I felt very safe.
Good.
So that was wonderful. So I want to thank you for that.
Pleasure.
Just some other questions.
Yes,
to
please.
It feels a bit strange to sort of steer the energy again, but just some I also enjoyed your vinyasa class.
Good.
This afternoon, which was really nice.
Yeah.
Very lovely. And I noticed that you are chanting, and I really, really like that.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I didn't see many teachers who are actually chanting in the class.
I always chant.
It's so
I
nice.
Love it.
Me too. And I remember from Arhanta.
Yeah. That every time we were doing the chakra cut, I was like,
tears. And oh my goodness, it was so nice. It just brings up so much. I don't know. Like, it's just so touching. And then especially when we're in this big group in the shala and everyone's chanting. And I think the first couple of times it was sort of people were holding back a little bit.
Yeah.
And then we had those instruments and it really started to become so real. And I felt it in every cell of my body.
Om
Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. That's a great one. So I wanted to ask you to just chant together. Well, this is obviously not scripted. So I was just thinking which chant... Om Namah Shivaya might be a bit too difficult, but I was thinking of Bansuri, or do you have any other suggestions?
Gayatri Mantra?
Yes, but okay. Yeah, Gayatri Mantra is wonderful. Can you, do you know what it means? Or where it stands for?
A lot.
I've heard that it's like the most powerful mantra, like because of the mantra, they bring those vibrations in the body, and it has the highest, how do you say that, frequency?
Vibrations,
yeah. Yes. It's very powerful, very healing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I really like it.
It's a really, you know...
Transformative as well.
Yeah, and it's really funny actually because I always chant this mantra, always. And it always makes me feel really happy and good and connected.
It does.
And then I realized, I was like, I have no idea what I'm chanting.
Like,
a couple of years ago. And then I started reading and the Sanskrit and trying to understand all of that, but it's
amazing. Should we just give it a go? Which melody do you use?
I know, I think I use a different one to most people.
Yeah, just give it a go.
Okay. Should we do it separately?
Yeah, and then we can see if we can, You want me to start?
Yeah, you do. Okay, I can do it also.
You go.
Okay. Om Bhum Bhuva Svaha Tat Savitvarenyam Bhargo Divasya Dhimahi Dhiyo Yo Na Prachodaya Om Bhum Bhuva Svaha Tat Savitvarenyam Bhargo Dvasya Dhimahi Dhiyo Yo Na Prachodaya Om. I feel it everywhere in my body. That's wonderful. So nice. Yeah.
Like this mantra, 1 minute or not even, and you just feel it, right?
Sometimes I'm driving my scooter and I'm like, Om.
Yes.
The crazy yoga girl.
That's amazing. Okay, Steph, this is just awesome stuff. I just am curious if you have an own personal mantra and a favorite quote.
Okay, so my personal mantra, which I do basically all the time, is I am love, I trust, and I'm safe.
Your love, your trust, and you're safe.
Yeah. So a lot of times when I'm feeling really like disconnected, if I just say I am love, I love everything and everything loves me. I trust in everything and everything trusts in me. And
you're
I'm
safe.
And that is really, really important for me. You know,
it's
I'm
the
feeling,
fundamentals, right?
You know, when you're feeling anxious or worried about something, I'm safe, and you just automatically feel connected. And I sometimes I'm walking, I get a little bit nervous in cities and lots of crowded areas, and I'm literally walking through the street with my boyfriend going, I'm safe, I'm love.
Is he joining you in
he's
in reciting?
Smiling.
He's just smiling.
He's just like,
he loves
stuff.
You. Cool. And is there a favorite quote which pops up?
There's a few that I always, for me personally, is I am more than just a physical body. I hold my soul and my mind.
Yeah.
So that's
you're more than just your physical body. That's
and,
nice
and
with the background. And
yeah, it's something that I always remind myself. You know, if I'm feeling like a little bit shitty and I'm looking in the mirror and I'm just being really picky and judgmental, I just look at them like, Steph, you are more than a physical body.
And it's so cool. Now that you say this, the wind starts to blow like crazy.
Power.
Yeah, it's like nature is like in awe with you're more than just your physical body. All right, Steph. I think, I'm just going to sit with it and let's have a cup of tea.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed having you on a podcast.
I love doing it. It's my first podcast. Awesome.
Let's hope that it comes out nice. You probably hear the waves in the background, you guys, but I think that's just a treasure of nature. Okay, so Steph, once again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you guys, thank you so much for listening. Do not forget to subscribe, to like, and to share. I'll see you soon next month. So yeah, you guys, the first episode of the Conscious Junkie Show of 2019, it's a wrap. I hope you enjoyed the conversation I had with my friend Stephanie Sargent as much as I did myself. I just want to let you know that you can find her for hypnotherapy sessions in Bali from February this year. I'd also highly recommend for you to visit her website, which is mindfulway.com, mindfulway.com. Then last but not least, I would love to take this opportunity to tell you about the two retreats that are coming up from April on. So the first retreat will be the Happy Heart Retreat at the beautiful island Mallorca, and it's going to be from the 11th until the 17th of April. This retreat will be all about opening the heart and enjoying life to the fullest. Then the second retreat will be held in Spain, close to Malaga, and then this is from the 13th until the 18th of June. I would absolutely love to take you on one of those adventures. So if you're curious, please take a look at my website, www.theyoganomad.nl. For now, lots of love and namaste.